Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis on WGN Everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Yeah, these early starts on the, well, it's not really the East Coast.
Isn't
Cleveland.
That kind of strange? I still don't quite understand why it's in Cleveland. It's not like the West Coast or the, I don't know, some other strange time zone. It's Cleveland. Why is a Cleveland game this early?
It starts at 6 o'clock Cleveland time.
Right.
Yeah, so, and 5 o'clock Chicago time. Why? I don't know.
You can't explain that, Rokan?
They don't have a life in Cleveland, I think is what we just learned. Kev, why don't you explain it?
Yeah, we'll go with that. That's really all I got. I don't have a full-blown explanation.
Lauren, you got anything for us on that?
Is there a 6-10 store that I don't know about? Like 7-Eleven used to be our sponsor.
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't think there is, though.
6-10. Got to head down to the 6-10, pick up a Slurpee and some eggs.
You know, we're sometimes open.
Well, like in Oregon, wouldn't it be the at 4:20? Because that's would be it.
Probably.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
total
game's
sense.
Starting at 4:20.
Spark up at 4:20 watching baseball.
Yeah, it makes baseball interesting. It's kind of cool.
Could do that in Illinois soon. We've got the bill that's going to be passed potentially.
Yeah. Yes,
start a Cubs game or a Sox game at 4:20. Could work here, too.
Anyway, I don't know. Just to get back to answering the initial question.
Nothing. I
think that that they only do half-day work in Cleveland anyway.
Yeah, no one works there.
They get there by 6 o'clock, and they're home by 9:30.
They're lazy people.
Right. They want to get home for the second hour of American Idol.
Oh, gee.
So, according to this report a couple of years, the idea was that it would keep more people in the city going to games instead of leaving the city entirely. So, basically, people going straight from work straight to the game. It's an attendance thing for them, I guess.
They've
been doing it for a few years.
Did some research.
Did you make that
I know. A lot of research. Took me, 10 seconds.
The Schmoogle?
Yeah. The Schmoogle. Which kind of makes sense, because Cleveland is so... I mean, it's different here. If you go to Wrigley, it's not like you can just walk outside your office in the loop and be at Wrigley. At Cleveland, you kind of can.
Right.
You can walk across the street and be inside the ballpark in 5 minutes.
Bars probably don't like that. They probably got that nice kind of overflow and then...
Yeah, but here's what you got, though. You got that street that's right there. I mean, I don't know why I'm trying to help Cleveland out here. What have they ever done for us?
No.
But...
we get some cheddar from the city of Cleveland here or what?
Yeah, they let us get a win against the Browns sometimes.
That's true.
Everybody gets it. Well, not anymore, though. Browns are hot.
The Bears-Browns Super Bowl? I'd love to see that.
It's a possibility. It is a possibility.
It is. They're looking pretty good.
Yeah. So
I guess that's what it is. Because the way Cleveland's structured and the fact that people can actually walk out of their office and walk to the ballpark. It's not exactly the same in New York
downtown.
Or Chicago or some other big town.
Walk out of Key Bank. That's where everybody works in Cleveland. Key Bank.
There you go.
And then because there's like 4 different Key Bank towers in Cleveland. They go, where is it? It's near the Key Bank Tower. Well, this is the Key Bank. Oh, no, the other Key Bank Tower.
You know, Cleveland gets a bad reputation. I like Cleveland, at least the brief time I spent there.
Right.
I didn't think it was all that bad. I mean, the thing is, you probably aren't going to spend a whole lot of time there because you can probably see most of the town in about 48 hours.
48 minutes?
Yeah, 48 minutes.
I mean, you can walk the town in 48 minutes.
It felt like we saw it all.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Oh, is that the Key Bank Tower? Yeah, that's the Key Bank Tower.
Which one?
I don't know. All right, we live in Chicago, though.
Yeah.
And Chicago has great moments, and it's got some tough moments. And nobody knows that better than Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, and he's joining us right now.
Nice.
And, Superintendent, thank you so much for spending some time with us. I know you sat down with Mayor-elect Lightfoot to talk about some summer strategies, and it would be, and I think a lot of us who've been covering this town for a long time, and obviously you've been working the streets for decades now.
Yeah.
We all know that this, we're entering, especially now in May, and it gets a little warmer, we're entering into what some people call the killing season. And then you also have downtown issues and some, issues in all the neighbors, not just people shooting at each other, but all kinds of stupid things, because the kids are out of school, too.
Right.
What are some new strategies that you guys are thinking of employing?
Well, I can give you an overall viewpoint of it. We're not going to give the specifics out until probably Memorial Day. But in general, I think one of the things that's going to help, and, we've been working on this summer plan since about February, so we briefed the current mayor, weekly on where we are with it, and then now we've briefed the mayor-elect on it. Mm-hmm. So I think two things that are going to be key is having our federal partners engage more in the summer initiatives. So I think that's a good thing. And then the second key piece, I think, is we're going to involve community stakeholders a lot more, because I think at the end of the day, you know, the answer isn't to lock up all these kids. You know, the answer is to give them alternatives to causing mayhem, you know, when they go around. And let's face it, not all of them are in that ilk, but the ones that are, then we have to deal with them accordingly.
But you also get kids to get wrapped up in this, too. I mean, let's talk just a little bit. We don't have to get into strategy of how you deal with this, but I mean, our experience for the last 10 years when you get large groups of kids coming down, primarily on CTAs, primarily on the trains, coming down and en masse getting off at Chicago Avenue or getting off at Division or getting off at Grand and, you know, getting out onto the street and moving in large numbers. And some of them are just out to move in large numbers and,
right.
You know, to create havoc. And this is all organized on social media.
Yeah, a lot of it is, and that's the problem, because with social media, they can ramp up the numbers, you know, in 15 minutes if they want to. You know, and, you know, you hit it right on the head. A lot of them gather in large groups sometimes to come down there and commit nefarious acts, or sometimes just to be in large groups. And what happens is that, I'll give you a perfect example. This last time around, five or six of them start running around down there. And then for some reason, all of them want to start running. So it looks a lot crazier than it actually is, you know, but we do have those in the groups that are causing issues, you know, committing batteries and thefts and things of that nature. But I think that as a city, we have to come together and, you know, at the end of the day, it's between right and wrong. And so if you're committing things that are wrong, then you have to suffer the consequences for it.
You got a new mayor coming in with her own ideas and certainly a resume of dealing and understanding police issues and community issues, and you have a consent decree, and there are do you see many changes, or what would you say are the challenges as you move to the summertime, a critical time for police and communities alike?
Yeah, you know, with the consent decree, of course, you know, we're in the midst of that now. So we really have to be mindful about constitutional policing. And I tell you all this. This is what kind of tickles me about this situation. You know, we get criticized if we do too much, and then we get criticized for not doing enough. You know, and to be perfectly honest, you know, these types of things is not a police issue. We're the law enforcement arm, of course, but that's really our lane. You know, so I think the critical issues I see coming up is, you know, giving people alternatives, you know, and just messaging out, letting them know definitively, if you come down anywhere in the city, downtown, north side, west side, south side, it doesn't matter. If you come there and you commit crimes, you will be dealt with. You know, just recently, the state's attorney and I got together to talk about what we were going to do in the event these things occurred during the summertime. And she's on board with exactly what CPD envisions. And I'm not going to give you all the specifics now, but I think you'll find we're thinking out of the box with this thing, and we'll be announcing it shortly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's really the issue. I mean, you are caught between the two hardest places you possibly
yep.
can, because you've got to find a way to stop people who are up to no good, and there's a lot of them. And you know, I always like to describe this to people who, you know, are trying to understand Chicago. Maybe they're not from here, or maybe they're from the suburbs, and they, you know, they think that Chicago is one gigantic, you know, crime scene, you know,
and it's not.
I mean, it's, you know, I mean, we know that the statistic is that 80% of the crime happen 8% of the blocks in Chicago. I mean, you think
yep.
about that, and violent crime, and
right.
so that's a very, very important and telling statistic. But the other thing that is important and telling about that, Superintendent, is that when you, like, when civilians, people that are not known to these, you know, primarily young men, but there's a lot of young women involved in it now, too, but when you're driving down the block, if they don't know who you are, they don't see you. You're invisible to them.
Right.
They know who it is that they have a beef with. You know, they know who it is who, if they come down that block, they're going to get shot at. And it's a totally And it's happening on social media, that, you know, the beefs, the grudges are, you know, are being developed there. They're
right.
Interpersonal stuff, drug deals going back, all these, you know, whatever it happens to be. Some guys sleeping with one other guy's wife or girlfriend or whatever the deal is. And then the next thing you know, shots are fired. It's like an almost impossible thing unless you get into the social media overlay of it. It's almost impossible. You try to be predictive, right? You have software that tries to do that, but what else can you do?
That's exactly right. You know, so I think moving forward, the police, we're doing a lot. Of course, we can always do better. But I think at the same time, we have to hold people accountable that can help do something about this. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of root causes of crime. You know, and I tell people all the time, this stuff starts at home. So what we need is for parents to be better at parenting. And if they cannot be, and we know that, then we have a responsibility to help them learn how to be better parents. But if we parented our own homes, then that home gets better. And if everybody on that block does that, then that block gets better. And then if everybody on that block and the next block do it, then the community gets better. So everybody has a vested interest to do their part to reduce this crime in Chicago.
Yeah. You've seen other, I mean, I don't think it's an understatement to say there's a bit of a rift between police organizations and Kim Fox's office, and I don't mean to speak for you, I mean the FOP,
right.
You've seen the suburban police organizations very strongly coming out about her decision to take a different approach on nonviolent crimes and not prosecute them to the level they've been prosecuted in the past. And some police chiefs in the suburbs and certainly some FOP members have said that that promotes lawlessness on our streets and they don't like it. Would you agree with that?
Well, what I say, you know, my colleagues have a right to their opinion. I think we have to strike that balance between holding people accountable, especially for violent crimes. The lower level stuff, depending on what it is, there still has to be a consequence. We have to figure out a way to prevent them from doing that. You know, if people think they can walk around with impunity, you know, when they're committing any crimes, of course that's going to make it worse. You know, so I think we just need to sit down as a group and figure out what is the best solution. But I do know this. If there's not a consequence for your actions, then people continue those actions until they get tired of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Mm-hmm. Until the consequence.
The word gets out, doesn't it? If you can run into a store and steal stuff and then you get away with it and you do it again and you get away with it, I think people understand that they can do that and it's
exactly
wrong.
So we have to figure out what's the balance. But at the very least, they should be arrested and have to go see a judge. And you know, it could be something as simple as forcing them to do community service for 3 weekends in a row. But there has to be some consequence. You know, now I don't concur with the idea that somebody that steals a loaf of bread should spend more time in jail pretrial than a gun offender. That's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah,
you know, but we have to figure this out. And I think, you know, rather than attacking each other, we need to sit down and have some candid conversation and try to find a middle ground.
Well, I think that was the thing that drove. I thought you did an amazing job, Superintendent, around the whole Jussie Smollett thing, because it was one of those moments where, I mean, I could just imagine what you and your guys around you must have thought at that moment, where all of a sudden you got this guy who's trying to use, you know, like a jiu-jitsu movie, he's trying to use, you know, the weight of the negative publicity that surrounds the Chicago Police Department and has for the last 4 or 5 years, and he tries to use the weight of that to try to better his career, and then to have it just, you know, not just disappear, but disappear in a really sort of mysterious way at the Cook County State Attorney's level. It's right. Like, you're like, wait a second. And the thing is that of all of the different reputational issues that this city has and the Chicago Police Department has, there, you know, and we try very hard here to tell as many stories as we can about when things go right, you know.
Right.
And there's a lot of stories to tell. Every day, there are dozens upon dozens upon dozens of stories where things go right. But it's just not enough, and it doesn't beat out the stuff that is truly
right.
Bad, because it's a power dynamic. But
right.
You know what? You stood up for you know, those 13,000 sworn on, you know, under your command, mm-hmm. And I just thought that was a moment. It was something that had to be said, and you said it in a way. There have been a lot of superintendents, you know, over the last number of years, and you know, some are better communicators than others. But you said it in such a heartfelt way of, you know, that wasn't like, you know, a cop with a gigantic mustache pointing his finger at me. That was that was a human being saying, hey, my colleagues who put their life on the line every freaking day to get out there, they deserve better than this.
Yeah, and our city, to be quite honest, deserves better than this. You know, we can make our own headlines. We've never had a problem with that. So I think, you know, for someone to manufacture a headline for us is just wrong on so many levels. And, you know, at the end of the day, we try to do the right thing. It doesn't always happen like that in this city. But I just think to use something like that to paint this city in a negative fashion is just wrong.
Yeah. All right, well, we wish you the best of luck as this thing moves forward now into the summer.
And yeah, I appreciate it.
Obviously, you know, not just that, but there's also, you know, obviously in the neighborhoods there are issues, and even in places, I think that's one of the things that are making a lot of Chicagoans nervous, is that it's spreading out again. Even targeted attacks are spreading out, because guys, and this has been going on a long time, but it's getting more attention now. You know, guys try to move out of the neighborhood because they know they're going to get shot at in their own neighborhood, right? So they go to another neighborhood and they think, oh, well, they won't find me up here. But they're on social media going, hey, I'm going to be at the Argyle stop in an hour, you know. And the next thing you know, shots are fired, and it's like, what? This point is really an important one. We do need to hold not just these individuals, but their families and the entire group think of that element of Chicago criminal. These are people who just want to do the wrong thing all day long. They get up wanting to do the wrong thing. That's
right.
How they were raised. That's how they make their money. That's how they stay alive.
Right.
And until we can somehow come up with the algorithm, come up with the solution to break that up, to break up that mindset, fighting an uphill battle.
That's exactly right, because the police, we have a part to play in all this, but at the end of the day, we have to figure out ways to settle the root causes of what happens with this stuff. Because I can tell you this, Ro, you know, out of the criminals that we have in Chicago, there's just a small subsection of them that are just hardcore criminals that I don't care what we do, what we offer them, that's between them and their God. But a lot of them, if we offer them alternative paths in life and show them how to get there, they'll take it. You know, because that's pressure when you have to come out of your house every day and you got to worry about the police, the stick-up man, or a rival gang. That's pressure. You know, so a lot of them do it for all sorts of reasons. But I think we just, as a city and as a country, to be quite honest, because we're not the only ones suffering with this stuff, you know, we have to come up with reasonable solutions to show people an alternative path. Now, once we throw it out there and they don't accept it, then you get what you get.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
That is for sure.
Yeah, I know. And you know that better than anybody. All right. Superintendent Eddie Johnson. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your service to the city.
Thank you all for having me.
All right.
All right.
All right. Let's check in now with Kim, find out what's coming up at the top of the hour.
A member of the Trump family subpoenaed to testify in front of a Senate committee.
Oh, no. Melania?
No.
Oh,
guess
okay.
Again.
Barron?
Nope.
Okay.
A little older.
Let's see here. Tiffany.
Getting warm.
Tiffany?
Yeah,
Tiffany?
Getting warmer.
No?
Getting warmer. Where is Tiffany these days? We don't hear from her.
I think she graduated with honors from Penn. Yeah, I'd like to look into the Lori Loughlin sort of situation that happened there.
You think?
Yeah. I have my own thoughts about that. All right. I think I know who it is, but I'll let you do it at the top of the hour.